sure most
because there's a Tumblr for Ward Kimball.
Is Ward Kimball still around?
I don't know. There's a Tumblr for him.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's just...
You can't have a Tumblr for a dead man.
Then it's called a Tumblr.
Save it for the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby. Dave was trying to do a countdown. We need 5 seconds of silence before it began. Dave could not shut up for 5 seconds.
I couldn't.
Dave was like a two-year-old child who was just told, just settle down, just be quiet for a second. Could not do it to save his life.
The ridiculous thing is I went, okay, we need silence. I'm going to count down. Then I went, five. Four allowed.
Yep.
Three.
Yeah.
That'll. So then, what I was trying to do actually was then when I do the noise removal, it will take me out of the show entirely.
Okay.
So it'd just be you talking.
So we have listened to the requests you've sent in, and Dave is being removed from the show entirely.
There's a Tumblr thing called minus Garfield or something like that, or without Garfield, World Without Garfield,
something like that. It's I knew what it was before you started saying all that nonsense. Garfield without Garfield.
Garfield doing yoga.
I think it's called Garfield without
Garfield.
It's called
Lasagna Garfield.
Okay.
Mondays are lasagna.
Garfield without laughs is called Heathcliff.
Is it?
Yes.
Heathcliff is just one panel, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Garfield without laughs is called Tiger? Was that one with a cat? Or is that a guy? Well, that's a kid, isn't it? I just put down a kid.
You sure did. You put down a kid. You know what? The only thing I think less funny than Heathcliff would probably be Marmaduke.
Marmaduke.
Yeah. Do you know Marmaduke, the giant dog? Yeah. He also then became a movie because someone went, let's make a movie out of Marmaduke. And I'm trying to think. I've got a weird, you know how you have that kind of almost dreamlike thing of like, did this happen or was it a dream? I believe there might have been a Heathcliff movie in development at a certain point. And I think I possibly might have been one of the writers floating for it. I think I was approached by someone on that and just going.
Then they heard you talking about it and you lost.
I think I might have lost it through this. But no, I think that actually happened. Someone had the rights to Heathcliff and approached me and were very excited that they might be able to get me on as the writer of the Heathcliff movie.
Wow. Ian, do you know what show number this is?
In cat years?
In dog years.
Show number 53, Dave.
That is not dog years.
Okay.
It is show number 371 in dog years.
Oh, very good. Good math.
I don't know if that was accurate, but anyway.
That's how you do math. You know, whenever you see those guys who are really good at math, mm-hmm. they just have to talk so fast that no one has a chance to whip out the calculator, and then they just go to town. That's how it works. That's how a mathemagician works.
I thought we'd celebrate by opening these Olympic Coke. This is from England.
Oh, you got me
an
Olympic
Coke. It's a British Coke. Yeah.
Nice. All right.
Unfortunately, you have to.
So this is the drink that got Kate Middleton pregnant.
Here is the can opener. Yes, so be careful.
All right. Okay, I'm taking this, and this is a can opener, which is attached to
a bottle opener, I should say.
Bottle opener, because a can opener would be wrong on a bottle, and this would...
Unless you want to drink it like evaporated milk.
Boy, this is not the easiest thing in the world to open. Why don't you talk for a while while you thank you for this very dull... This is not even close to happening. Hey, Dave, why don't you open that for me?
Okay.
There you go.
Give me that thing.
Please, there you are. Give it a try.
This may be overwhelming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's in metric. That's the problem. This is an imperial bottle opener.
There you are.
And the can is...
If you were a beer drinker, that would be a much sharper thing than
you
think. All right. So
there you go.
Am I telling you what this tastes like when I taste it?
Oh, I hope it tastes good.
It tastes quite delicious. And that is from England, so that Coca-Cola contains sugar, not fruck-fuck.
Not corn syrup.
Well, yeah, but the technical name for that in North America is fruck-fuck.
I'm going to struggle with mine now.
Okay, there you go. Crack it open. There are podcasts that do nothing but eat snacks or drink things.
Is that right?
And then tell you how it tastes.
Oh, wow.
So you just take a little. Now, this is Dave drinking this. This is an Olympic Coke. Wait, Olympic Coke? Yeah, okay, that's from this year. For some reason, I was thinking our damn Olympics from 2 years ago.
Ah, delicious.
Nice job, everybody. Nice job with us drinking Coke in the beginning of our episode. For those of you that thought last week's us talking about buns for the first half hour was dull, this week we're going to start drinking Coke and discussing the Coke from the beginning of the show.
Well, it's in a metal container, which seems kind of odd because metal is actually, I would think, be worse than plastic in terms of heat, like keeping it cold, because metal would transmit the cold outside of the Do you know what I mean? Like,
I see what you're saying. Transference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or induction. It's got a name for it, right?
Oh, God. Really? Are we doing this?
I don't know.
Are we doing this?
I
was backing you up on your damn theory, and then you're like, no, I'm going to correct myself. Like Johnny Asshole.
I still think... Because I think glass was best in terms of keeping the
if you have a glass bottle of Coke, and then you have a can of Coke, you're saying the glass bottle of Coke will stay colder for a longer period of time if you take it out of the fridge.
Yeah.
I think you're living in a fool's paradise, my friend.
Really?
A fool's paradise.
You think that when we had bottles of pop, it went cold faster than like a can?
Well, you know what? I got no horse in this race at all. I think a can, though. Metal seems to me that would
I just want to point out one thing.
Yeah.
There exists in the world little insulated beer holders or pop can holders that, you know, keep the can cold.
Keep the can from immigrants.
I do not think that there are bottle ones.
Okay.
That do that.
All right. That sounds fine. This looks like something we could research.
I don't think so.
All right. Good.
Move on.
This, again, is something we do on the show, is Dave will bring up a point. I'll go, oh, that's something that's easily researchable. Why don't we look it up? Dave will not want to look it up. I'll say, let's look it up after the show. We don't look it up after the show, and we move on with our lives. So we're just making them up, factsy facts.
Why not?
We did this last week.
This is the internet, sir.
We did this last week with the Rex Reed review of Cabin in the Woods.
Yep.
Though I did put a thing on our Facebook page about, you know, someone breaking down all the things that were incorrect with it.
Oh, you did? I missed that entirely.
Well, today I've been what you call a busy bee, Dave.
Okay. Oh, so you put it up today?
I put that up today. Okay. I put up a commercial for Mascotron because we were talking about Mascotron last week. And I put up a week, I'm about a week behind on my cartoons. Actually, 2 weeks probably. And I put up a cartoon as well. So they're done. But you, speaking of, I'm as busy as a bee. You're as busy as a beaver being stung to death by bees. You put up another one of what we call your mammoth tomes.
Yes. It's the War and Peace of internet blogging.
Right. You're basically like if you go up to grandma and go like, what was the war like? And then you just like just lay it all out.
Then you just open that blog.
That's right.
You open the website, show them that and that post. And when they die halfway through it, then they know what the war felt like.
That's right. Yeah. Well, when I put it on this morning, my computer started to smoke a bit. It was just like, it's too big a file. But you describe how you do the title cards.
Yes.
Which is, as I say,
sickening detail.
That's right. You come up with an idea. Mm-hmm. You send it off to Korea.
Yes.
Someone draws it for you, sends it back, and then you sign your name to it, Walt Disney style.
If that were true, they would all be better than they are. Because those people know how to draw,
mm-hmm.
unlike me.
Those people, that's what we're calling them now. Those people, that's what it comes down to.
Those people over there.
All right, I hope you're talking about animators. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, animators.
Good. All right, that's fine.
I'm just saying, the people, I guess it does sound kind of bad. Artists, Korean artists know how to draw.
You know, speaking of people.
They learn in a different way than we do.
That's right, in Korean.
Because my wife is an ESL teacher, mm-hmm. so she's taught lots of Korean students through the years.
Okay.
And they love to come here to go to school because it's so different than how they learn in Korea. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they do, like, for art in Korea is they spend a lot of time on, what would you call it, on the...
Beatings.
The basics.
Okay.
Basics of it. You know what I mean? So they'll learn about how to shadow something.
Okay.
So they'll draw circles and then do lots of shading. And that's what they do. That's all they do.
Right.
Just all this basic stuff that, after, you know.
It just feels then it leads to them doing, you know, some amazing. Horrible Saturday morning, you know, dogs who are firemen, terrible show about rapping cats. You know, that's just
Well, just
terrible.
So you know that all that terrible art or all that terrible animation behind it is tons of like, you know, super knowledge, like anatomy, you know, shading, folds, you know, the hanging and all the lines and stuff.
Right.
They know all that.
Well, this is the amazing thing. Whenever we go to another land, Pia and myself, like we go to Germany or Spain or somewhere.
Where those people live.
You know what, everybody? Everyone's those people. We're all those people, so it's okay. But you go over there and you look at some of the art that's there. It's insanely good, like insanely good.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, I'm meeting professionals in their craft, but mm-hmm. like it just seems like head and shoulders above what we have sort of in mainstream comics in North America.
Okay.
And yet they, you know, a lot of these folks really would like to work here. They can't for various reasons.
And for some reason,
it doesn't translate well here. Like they ship it over and it just mm-hmm. doesn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
But the skills, oh my God, it's ridiculous. Like they just
there,
blindingly,
wasn't
blindingly
there that,
good.
Wasn't there that time in the 70s or early 80s where Filipino artists were kind of moved into like DC and, mm-hmm.
And then other people would ape that style.
Ape that style.
Almost exactly. Like some people would actually do a direct trace over.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like, who were some of the artists of that time? Do you remember like...
Oh, no, I can't remember like straight names.
I can't remember.
I can remember the people that traced the other people, but I'd rather not say their names.
Oh, let's not say their names, Rich Beckler. But because that would be unfair to name people who trace things like Keith Giffen and people like that.
Okay. All right.
Did I just do it?
I don't know, Mr. Mr. Woodward.
I can edit it out.
Namer of names.
Deep throat. So you're saying mainstream though. So you're not saying like it's the best stuff.
No, but
style.
Even like going just to Thought Balloon recently.
Thought Bubble.
Was it Thought Balloon? Okay,
Thought Bubble.
Okay, Thought Balloon. So I went to Thought Bubble Balloons. You know what? I am still not over my cold.
Uh-huh.
My brain is not fully functioning. You know, as long as I can get a verb into a damn sentence, I'm happy.
Okay.
So we went over there, and you just see even
you got half a verb into that sentence.
I did.
Yeah.
I just looking at self-published work, and it was just so damn good. I mean, we've got amazing people here. We got your Robin Bougies, your Rebecca Darts.
Yeah.
We got James Lloyd, who I work with on Simpsons and Futurama, does his own self-published stuff as well. There's amazing people in town. I'm not saying there's not, but just consistently the sheer amount of amazing self-published, and I'm just talking like go down to the old Kinko's and print it up yourself stuff. Was just outstanding, like just jaw-dropping, you know, to the point where I just go, why am I working? How can I work? You're obviously much better than me. And if anyone if anyone discovers you, I'm fucked. So I've got to break your spirit or somehow give you this cold I've got, make you diseased.
So there was a lot of French kissing going on at your table, is what you're telling me.
Yes.
Wow.
I would actually go to other people's tables, and I would go, can I give you a Canadian hand rub?
What's the Canadian hand rub?
Yeah, you just rub a person's hand and then go, oh, I'm sorry, I have a cold.
Oh.
That's a Canadian hand rub.
Yeah.
But you got to throw the apology in.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Actually, I did not have a cold when I was over there. I just had food poisoning from terrible British food.
But don't you think it's the same here? Like, don't you think there's amazing people doing amazing things here that
do it
on a level that not everyone sees?
I don't think that we have the art structure here that encourages it in the same way that they do in Europe. I think that there's a greater exposure to traditional art, like classic art, that people have that we don't have in North America as much.
Okay.
So I think people here, when I see their drawings, I see them more influenced by, say, a Dan Klaus, if they're in the alternative scene, or, of course, Jack Kirby or whoever the Jack Kirby imitator is of the day, if they're into the mainstream scene, but not so much classical art. I don't see that kind of background as much.
Yeah.
But there, it just seems like they have a wider range of influences to draw on, so you get a richer piece of work.
I think most like superhero or mainstream artists now aren't as influenced by Kirby. I think they're influenced by Art Adams.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. I don't think it because I haven't thought it. You know, that's a thought to run around my head.
Okay.
But really, Art Adams, that's an interesting
choice. Because I think Art Adams is influenced by Kirby, inked by Joe Sinnott.
Okay, well, where's the big... Okay. Now for Kirby, for someone to be influenced by Kirby, of course, was everywhere.
Yeah.
And you could not be influenced by him. Mm-hmm. Art Adams, what do you think the big Art Adams work was that these artists you're talking about are influenced by? His covers?
His line work.
Okay, like but in what?
The way that he uses... Because he does a lot of that, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's really cross-hatching, but you know what I mean? Like putting all those little lines in, the
very
feathering
Brian
and stuff like
Bland
that.
Style. Yeah, very tiny lines. Yeah. I gotcha. But what's the piece of work do you see that people would be going, Art Adams, yes, his work on blank was a big influence on me.
I don't know.
I mean, I agree. Like I see there's an artist, I forget their name, but on Wolverine and the X-Men where I go like, oh, there's a clear line from Art Adams to you. And I love Art Adams stuff, but I don't know what his big hit book is. Like I don't know if he's ever
kind
of success that people would then base their craft on.
Well, I think he's the artist in that sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's a fan favorite, but I think he's an art fan favorite.
Hmm. Okay.
Like, I think people who were coming up in the 80s and looking, you know, so they had, either they could have been following the guy who worked on X-Men, Paul, I can't remember his name.
Ryan, I believe.
Paul Ryan?
I think so. Paul Smith.
Paul Smith. Paul Ryan,
who was vice president. Son of a fuck. Look, everybody.
Ian has a cold.
I could not be.
He's drinking Coke without any fructose in it, and it's totally fructing up his mind.
You know what? Better to take a wrong guess than to take no guess.
I agree.
Is what doctors say. No, it's not. They do not say that.
Yes, they do. Have you not watched House?
No, he thought that was real. Like, he thinks everything is, like, right, and then he's proven wrong.
I don't know. I don't like that guessing thing. But anyway.
I don't like that it takes him five times and he really puts everyone through torture and then, you know, they did a thing and then, yeah, I don't like that.
It was a really good show for a year.
Okay. I wish Hugh Laurie the best. I like Hugh Laurie a lot.
I do like Hugh Laurie.
Mm-hmm.
Very talented man.
Yes, he is.
But I would prefer him as Bertie Wooster than House.
Well, you've got that. That's already done.
Know. I'd rather watch it than...
You say you would prefer a piece of chocolate cake? There is a piece of chocolate cake there if you'd like it. You don't have to tell me that. Just enjoy the chocolate cake.
I'm just
saying. Back to Art Adams, who you think is a superstar.
Well, it's not that I think he's a superstar. Because I could say the same thing. Like, you could say the same thing about someone like, say, Peter David, who's been incredibly influential as a writer of a particular style of comics, right? But you would never say, what did he do that was so big?
Wow. But, I don't know. Boy.
But he's had this kind of through line through Marvel. And a lot of people follow his style of writing, his way of continuity and stuff like that.
Right.
But would you say he's had a huge hit?
I would say both of them had their popularity peak, I think, in the early 90s, I'd say. Maybe late 80s, early
90s. But see, someone like that Jim Lee?
Not that they're not both working and not doing good work now, but if you're talking just in terms of pure popularity, I'd say, you know, those days have passed. But people like them, still like them. And Art Adams gets a lot of great cover work. He's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think he's a person who would you would put on a book to launch it and then go like, this is going to be, you know.
One,
I don't think he could maintain that schedule, but I don't know.
No,
don't know
he's probably too particular in his...
I'm not a big fan of the monthly schedule regardless. That's something I think is a flaw in our mainstream comics anyway.
Is that speaking as someone who has to write comics every month?
It's speaking as someone who knows
artists. Is that
someone
who likes a monthly paycheck? Is that someone who's complaining about...
I'll get the monthly paycheck. That's fine. But my problem with it is it's based on the old newsstand, right? I mean, the reason that you have monthly is because comics used to be sold on the newsstand, right? So you had to stock them at the same rate as you would magazines, which were also monthly.
And they were often sold to women. Am I right, man? Am I right? Okay, anyway, go on.
Okay. But then when the direct market came, they maintained that monthly schedule, which I guess, you know, it works. It works in a comic store for some consistency, you know, but I just like the art style of the day now isn't the art style of the day then, which was kind of the Marvel House style, which was, you know, like a lot faster and a lot, I don't say sloppier, but a lot of like, you know, in the backgrounds, just make 'em ups, you know, and if you got a gun, you don't do any research and it's that kind of stuff. And it's fine. It's imagination. It's lovely. But the type of art people are doing now, I think, is more detailed and they can't maintain that pace for the most part. So you get a lot of fill-in artists.
Yeah.
And that's jarring.
Not just fill-in artists, but if you look at how Marvel is now, there's like four inkers in an issue. I don't read these books, but I just noticed.
Yeah, because you got to maintain that pace.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, then when it's finally collected in a trade, it's really jarring to see that shift. And you're just like, why don't you just wait till that person was done? You know, if you really like, you know, I don't know, the Incredible Hulk, you know, just, you know, do them in an arc and then like release them in arcs, you know.
You could break an arc. It's just made of wood.
But wow.
I think that, I mean, I agree. We talked a little bit about this with when Tucker Stone was on. We talked about graphic novels.
Okay.
As a sort of next step of comics. And my problem with, I have a couple problems with graphic novels.
Okay.
One is...
Too graphic.
Yes.
And they're not novel enough anymore.
That's right. We've all heard about them. What would you prefer? What would be a better name than graphic novel?
No. Let's not make up fakey names.
Yeah.
I'm done. They're comics. It's a comic.
It's comics, but...
It's a collected comic
book. But what
book.
I mean,
it's a trade.
Yeah. When you yeah. But when you say trade, like, let's take it, it's no longer like a collection, though. Then it becomes its own thing.
Okay.
Right? So if you're saying, let's get rid of the monthly comic.
You can call it a graphic novel. You can call it whatever you damn well want. You know what? Call it by the title of what it is.
I mean, there's two problems with it. One is you end up with, I think there's like a disconnect between you and the audience in that what we had previously with even independent comics that followed a fairly iffy, you know, schedule of release. You know, like they're supposed to be quarterly, very rare.
Tee-hee.
That's right, more tri-monthly or, you know, it was just that way.
Or you just stop them halfway because you got bored. The artist just went, yeah, I'm done. Oh, it's great because I invested
story.
Eight issues of this comic so far.
Called Underwater.
Or called Tyrant or called any other fucking independent comic of that time. You know, and that's fine. Move on to something else rather than, you know, kill years of your life. I get that, but it's annoying.
Yeah. Anyway, please. I mean, Tyrant is more a case of someone who just didn't have the wherewithal to continue on with what he wanted to do. I mean, that's the issue there. It's not necessarily, but I mean, those guys had trouble following the Swamp Thing schedule. I mean, that was a regular shit show. I mean, it shipped late, which was unusual for a DC comic
time. I like what Dark Horse does.
That was Steve Bissett and John Totleben.
Who was also a very beautiful artist.
They're great artists, but I mean, they did, that was work intensive art that they were doing.
But look at something like, Okay. You know, you look at, again, like Scott Pilgrim. Whenever that comes out is whenever that comes out, and then mm-hmm. it sells fantastic, yeah. and it's all fine. Yeah. What I like is something like what Dark Horse does with Hellboy, which is when a series is completed,
yeah.
then they release the miniseries,
okay.
and it's maybe 2 issues, 3 issues, 5 issues, 6 issues, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They release that. That's in the stores. People go, oh, I like Hellboy. Pick it up. Buy it. And they know that those issues are going to come out. There's going to be no yeah. fillers because they finished them before they did it.
Okay.
The end. And I think you could do that with miniseries mm-hmm. quite easily. Like, I understand Marvel and DC have to have, you got to have Superman published on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
I get that. You need a consistency, and comic book stores need to know something's coming in. They can't just go, it's all randomy bambity. I get that. But we can yeah. have like an X-Men miniseries
okay.
or like all the other, there's always like a Spider-Man book like Amazing, and then there's Spectacular or Web of or Sensual Spider-Man. There isn't that, but you know, there will be one day.
Yes, there will.
There was a real creepy comic once that took place in the future where Spider-Man killed Mary Jane with his spider sperm over time because it was radioactive and they didn't know. That was a disturbing comic. No, boo to that. Anyway, but like all the other spider comic books you want to bring out, just bring them out in arcs of like when they're done. You know, people go to comic stores, you know, on Wednesday or whenever they go, you know, it's yes. fine. It's fine. We got to ditch the monthly nonsense. That's not how things work anymore. We don't live in that world. And also so many people impulse buy the comics off the web anyway. The times are a changing is what I say.
Well, I can see what you're saying. And it's sort of an agreement between the publisher and the audience that there's going to be this, you know, this on time, you know, thing with continuity, continuity of artists and writer,
and
that's good. It's a covenant between the audience and the publisher, so it's a story arc of the covenant.
Okay, that is two arc jokes you've done.
I can't stop it.
Did one about the wooden arc. You did one of the arc of the covenant.
Can't stop me.
Okay, please hammer. Don't hurt them. Now, your books, like a book like that, you like Love and Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how often does that come out?
Well, now it comes out as, I think it comes out yearly.
Is it? Is it generally like Hate? Hate also comes out like annually?
But it's published as a collection. Like it's like not hardbound, but it's a, you know, square bound.
Okay.
A collection of stories that not necessarily complete. Like it's still serialized.
Mm-hmm.
So the stories still have an arc that carries on. But I mean, that's so different. I mean, there's never going to be another writer artist on Love and Rockets mm-hmm. besides, you know, Beto and Jaime. That's it. So when those guys, you know,
explode,
expire, I think is what you're looking for.
No, explode. I expect they'll explode.
When they perspire, then
if you draw that much, eventually the ink will seep into your fingers, will build up in your heart, and you will explode in an ink explosion. That's how that works.
In 1991, Lisa and I, we went down to California, went down to Disneyland with Lisa's cousin from England and her son.
Okay.
We drove down there, and we thought it'd be fun to go to Griffith's Observatory, because it's an observatory,
mm-hmm.
and also it's Griffith's.
Right.
But you can see the Hollywood sign from it.
Featured heavily in Zippy the Pinhead. Quite
yes.
often, Bill Griffith will go there, and yes. we'll have a conversation.
Also featured quite heavily in Rebel Without a Cause.
That's right. And yeah. Charlie's Angels 2, Boobs a Poppin'.
And that one... Bowfinger, the Steve Martin comedy with...
That's right. And in a lot of pornos.
Is that right?
Nope. Just making that up.
They'll be having sex in the actual planetarium part of the observatory?
Sorry, I was thinking of Cars 3.
Okay. Cars 3. There is no Cars 3.
Doing it bumper style. Bumper to bumper. Cars 3.
So...
There probably is actually a Cars porno now that I'm thinking about it. That wouldn't be the hardest thing in the world to make. Anyway, go ahead. Continue.
It wouldn't be the hardest thing in the world to make, but it would be the hardest thing in the world to watch.
Unless you had a really specific fetish.
Yeah. There are those people. Have you ever seen?
And then one turns to the other. Is that good for you? I'm exhausted. And everyone has a good laugh.
Yes.
Well, I should have done that as Larry the Cable Guy. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
I got her done. Okay, go ahead.
So we're at the observatory, and there's these two guys there that look like the Hernandez brothers.
Right.
And I was looking at them, I was thinking, these guys look like the Hernandez brothers. And they're looking at me. And I was wearing a Jim Woodring shirt,
mm-hmm.
Frank shirt. And so they kept looking at me, and I was looking at them thinking, those guys look like... And finally, I had to say to them, I said, because I'd met them before. Like,
yeah.
When I say met them, I stood on the other side of a table
stalk
in front of them.
Yeah.
Yes, I'd stalk them with a camera and a microphone. And I said, I'm sorry to bother you, but are you guys the Hernandez brothers? They're like, yeah, we are. I said, yeah, I thought so, because I was looking at you, and I was thinking, it looks like Beto and Jaime, like, you know. And they're saying, yeah, we're looking at you thinking, that guy's wearing a Jim Woodring shirt. So, yeah.
Get him.
Get him. That's right. They tackled me. So they were there. They take taking their nephews, their nieces and nephews, to the planetarium, and they just were kind of wandering around.
Oh, cool.
Killing time, I guess, till the exploration of the galaxy was over.
Right.
I don't know why they weren't there.
Nah,
but anyway.
They don't care.
They don't care. But, yeah, so I think...
You're saying artists are people just like us.
Artists are people just like us. But I think it's kind of like...
You say they shouldn't have been there. They should have been working on a monthly book.
Like, I think it's... maybe the market is changing now because you have you have publishers who are set up now to promote books.
Okay.
Do you know it different than promoting comic books?
All right.
You know, so you have your Drawn in Quarterly, or you have your Fantagraphics, mm-hmm. or whoever, Ad House, or First Second, or all these kind of independent publishers who are strictly publishing graphic novels, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, let's call them graphic novels.
And, you know, so they know how to market. Craig Thompson, who disappears for 5 years to draw a book, right? Or market a Chester Brown, who disappears for 3 years to draw a book, or whoever, right? Like, those people are gone. You don't walk into the store every day and every few months and there's Yummy Fur in the shelves and you go, yay, Yummy Fur. Like, now you have to wait like 3 years and you go, yay, paying for it. Then you ready to go, oh, I paid for that. But you know what I mean, right? So it's such a different thing now. And I guess the real problem is the mainstream comics are sticking to this kind of antiquated system, as you pointed out.
Well, there's a lot of problems. I mean, comics have gone up in price, up in price, up in price, up in price. And every time they go up in price, up in price, up in price, up in price, they go, you know what it is? Listen, I wish we could do something about it, but it's the cost of paper. Brother, it's the cost of paper. What can we do? It's the cost of paper.
How about go back to the old paper?
No. Even that paper. It's just paper.
Oh,
it costs lots
paper.
Of money.
Okay.
And then it's shipping. Oh, man, brother. Gas prices to take those comics from there to there.
Yeah.
Okay. Nowadays... there's digital, right?
Mm-hmm.
Digital. So there's a comic that I get costs $4 because mm-hmm. holy shit,
yeah.
paper costs so much.
Yeah.
And this had to, the gasoline it mm-hmm. took to get to, and the labor.
The amount of comics they had to burn with gasoline.
The labor they had to pack this, and the factory that had to make this,
okay.
and the staples that had to be shipped in from Australia. Okay, I get that that's $4.
Yeah.
Now, on my computer, I've got the same comic. And it cost me $4. And this is digital. And it just came through space to my computer. And I understand the reason that you want to have them both cost $4 is because, mm-hmm. like, hey, I don't want to put the comic book stores out of business. But now it feels like, well, now you're faking your prices.
Yeah.
Now this digital comic you've got here, I don't mind paying for what something's worth or what something costs. But if a digital comic costs the same as a print comic, that is all kinds of bullshit. That is bullshit. You've just made up this price to make this other person.
Sorry, what is it again?
Bullshit.
Okay.
This other person who's running the store, mm-hmm. God bless them, it's great that they're running a store.
It's called brick and mortar stores.
Lovely. Maybe it is. Maybe it's made out of tin. Maybe it's made out of straw. I go to the Three Little Pigs comic store.
Okay.
So there's three in a row.
Yeah. There's the
straw, we blow
one.
Away everyone else, is what they say.
Is that right?
No, that's Big Bad Wolf. He's right next door.
He has a different place.
So now the prices are fixed and faked to you know, and you know what? Price fixing, that's illegal. You can't fucking do that. There's a reason that you can't fix prices on things. Price fixing, for those of you who don't know, means two companies that make, you know, a certain product can't go, hey, we're going to charge this, right?
Yeah.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Okay,
because
I see. I was getting confused with price affixing, which is putting the price sticker on.
No, that's
product.
Absolutely
that's
fine.
That's okay.
So what I've got when I download a comic to my iPad is I've got a fake price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're just making up.
Yeah.
But of course, the person who is profiting from that, who doesn't have to pay for the paper,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't have to pay for the staples and all this, is just like is getting even more for that than they should, and that pisses me off.
Well, but one of the problems with your argument there is that they have to scan all those pages in.
Yeah. No,
to put them up on the website.
There you go. Boom. Yeah, I was just thinking, like, they scan anyway for the other thing. But you're right. I was treating you seriously, and that is my problem.
That is your problem.
Like,
that's everyone's problem, taking me seriously.
If you have a copy of Spider-Man, and it's mm-hmm. like the modern copy of Spider-Man, let's say you're
okay. –
now, he's fighting Dr. Octopus.
Again?
Yeah, he is, actually.
Okay.
Okay. So you got that, and you're giving me 22 pages or whatever a modern comic is, and you're charging me $4, which is ridiculous because really, you know, I can go rent a movie. I could do all these other things. I could just list out.
You could go get a hand job for $4.
From where? From yourself?
Yeah.
And then just put a little money in the jar? Yes. That's a nice thing.
That's my allowance.
That's a good savings technique. Yeah. Every time you pull one out, mm-hmm. you got to put one in.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, wash your hands first before you put it in.
That's how I saved $4,000, Ian. It's not a joke.
Good on you. So, oh, that is disturbing. So you got your Spider-Man comic. And so you give me the 22 pages for whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what doesn't cost you any more is to, like, throw in a couple of back issues on top of that.
Sure.
Go like, hey, let me throw in some classic Dr. Octopus. I'll throw in the first appearance of Dr. Octopus, mm-hmm. maybe when he married Aunt May, something like that. It costs nothing. You could pad that thing up like nobody's business, give you really good value, but they won't because they've got to make it parallel to the print edition.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to – and that to me seems – right now the system is as I said, bullshit. And until that gets broken, until we stop being polite in that way and deal with what the real economy is instead of this fake, we want to be nice to everybody economy, yeah. then we're still going to remain screwed.
Well, it is called the virtual economy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That's based on the Virtual Boy, the Nintendo Virtual Boy system, which didn't work?
Well, you know, so I guess it's fair then that the Cerebus digital thing, those are 99 cents.
Okay.
And you... So that seems a fair price.
That sounds fair.
Me.
I bought almost every issue of Cerebus I got for about half price. Mm. You know, I'd always buy the back issues in stores because, you know, they're always trying to clear out their back issues. Yeah. So, yeah, it's for whatever the market will bear.
But then you also get his notebooks and stuff in the back.
Good.
So that seems like what you're saying, like you should get that some extra.
That seems right. That seems like what the minimum should be.
Yeah.
Like since we're working in such a different medium right now, it's like what should you give people for, you know, X amount of – like here's the thing. For 99 cents, I can get an Angry Birds and mm-hmm. I can play that for weeks to months.
Yeah.
You know, or I can buy a Cerebus comic. Now, that Cerebus comic, I will read the comic as good as it is, maybe once, twice, three times.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, what is it, an hour's worth of entertainment? Okay. Maybe.
Sure.
So, yes, you should throw in, like, extra stuff because mm-hmm. that's the store you're in. That's the market you're in. It's like Pia used to say, you know, what they used to call the popsicle principle. When you went into a drugstore, you had a popsicle and you had a comic that cost about the same amount. You had to make the comic worth more than the popsicle because that's the kid going in with their quarter.
Yeah.
It's like, I want a comic or I want a popsicle. What am I going to do? Okay, boom. And the market you've got now with the iPads and whatnot is you've got games that cost like a fourth of what a comic costs mm-hmm. that will last... you know, like 100 times, no exaggeration, longer than your comic. So, buddy, you got to know what store you're in. And I don't think people at this point do.
Interesting.
And I say that with my microphone sliding down the pole right now.
Because of a technical problem with the mic.
Yeah. I had this happen to me once when I was doing CBC's The Debaters where my microphone wasn't working and I had to
debate.
Did
you lose the debate?
No, I tied that one.
Oh, that's
I think
good.
That was with Erica Sigurdsson on the topic of spanking, which we discussed last week, strangely enough.
And you were for it.
I cannot remember if I was for it or against it, actually. I just remember it ended up with tied with both the host and her spanking me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's CBC for you. Real pervy network. What do you think a good value is for a comic?
What if I was going to buy a comic?
Right, like a standard. I'm going to go standard comic. Like, say it was, an issue of Hate, not the current issue of Hate, but like what Hate used to be.
$1.99.
You think $1.99? That's a $2 value. Mm-hmm. That's worth your. Yeah, that's pretty good, especially in Canada because it's a toonie. It feels like it's a coin. Take it out, boom, lay it down, take it up. Yep, agreed.
To me, that's a fair price. Like once you start getting into $4, I mean, you've lost me then
mm-hmm.
as a potential customer. And what makes it worse now for buying those sort of things is the back of your mind knowledge that you're going to be probably buying it again as a book collection.
Yeah.
You know, and so that feels like a double ripoff that you're paying too much for this mm-hmm. and you're not like, so you say that, how come they use glossy paper now? Like, so it wouldn't be cheaper for them to do it in like a old kind of pulp style?
I don't think the bleaching is what's costing the money. I think it's just the paper itself.
Paper itself.
It costs a certain amount. It's the weight of carrying it. It's the transport and whatnot.
Yeah. Okay.
It's also the world that you're in. You're also in the same world where you can download a movie for $4.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think about that as well. You know?
Okay. Yeah, no. I agree with you. Like, I mean, here's the thing, though, for comics. Is comics appeal to nuts? Like, you can't help it. for some reason.
What specific nuts are you talking about?
Almonds.
Okay.
Wait, are they really a nut?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Almonds are a nut.
Which one isn't a nut? Brazil nuts. Brazil nuts aren't really a nut.
Peanuts are not a nut.
Brazil nuts aren't a nut either.
All right.
And the Brazil nut, I believe the shell is poison.
In Brazil, they just call them nuts.
The shell is poison.
Okay.
I think.
I believe peach pits are also poison.
Yes, they are, as we learned from an episode of Emergency.
Emergency, all right.
There's a little boy making baskets out of his peach pits, and then he got poisoned. But anyway, what was I talking about?
You were talking about how you lost your virginity.
That's a sad story.
It cost $4. It cost you got $4. A hand job and...
and a full jar. Of coins! I can't remember.
We were talking about, like, what $2 would be a good value for a comic. You went from there to, oh, yeah, that reminds me of, and then you went off on one of your tangents.
I can't even remember what it reminded me of.
It is interesting. Like, I bought a couple of movies the other day. I bought two James Bond movies for $10 each.
Mm-hmm.
Majesty's Secret Service. Actually, I quite enjoyed it. Weird how self-referential it is to the previous
Honor
movie.
Majesty's Secret Service?
Yeah, with the one Lazenby.
That's the best James Bond movie.
Wow, that is an interesting choice. We can discuss that in a bit. but, like, I paid $10 for the movie at Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Real pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's fine. I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
Yet, here's the thing. I got Netflix. I pay $8 for that. Yeah. I can watch infinite movies all month.
Not as pretty as the Blu-ray, though.
Fair enough, okay. But they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. I watched Django on that, or Django, or whatever they call it. What's it called? The Rango. Rango's what I saw.
Rango.
Django's the...
Django Unchained.
Is the thing coming up.
Django is the prequel to...
That's right. But I should be used then to, I get all the movies for this amount, but I'm fine with it. Actually, the thing is, when you watch that many movies, you get into, I want to watch movies, you actually don't mind paying for movies.
Okay.
I think comics could do that too. I wish there was a Netflix for comics where they would offer a certain amount of, like, free comics and just go, you got to hook the people in, brother.
Yeah.
I think that's the big problem right now is we don't have the first one's free, buddy. I know there is occasionally a free comic on a Comixology or whatever, but there isn't it or like a free comic books day, but there isn't really that to hook the kids in now or not even the kids, just the new reader.
But it's not part of the culture though. Like when you're a kid, everyone had comics,
right?
So if you went to someone's house, they were guaranteed to have a closet full of Richie Riches or a closet full of whatever that you could sit in and read.
But people like a good satisfying,
you know, they had Mad magazines or whatever,
a satisfying quick read. I mean, again, my wife did a comic called Why the Last Man, and that was a comic.
I've heard of it.
The story that over and over happens whenever people talk to her is I wasn't reading comics. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine gave me this comic.
Okay.
I loved it. It was the only comic I read. And usually it then goes to now I'm reading certain comics.
Yeah.
So I think the desire to – people like reading. They just want to be able to read something fast.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
And comics are that. But now we got to somehow get them into people's hands.
What I was going to say, now I remember what I was going to say.
Good.
Was that the thing about comics is it has an audience. It's kind of almost built into
them. Oh, you said
them.
They were nuts.
Well, I just mean that for me, and I think for most people who read comics, there's something about it that appealed to us before we even knew there were comics.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And it spoke to us in a way that it's sort of almost, you can't explain it, but you wanted something like that. And when you found it, it was what you wanted.
All right.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you think it's different than people that like animation? That kind of thing? Like, is it different than, because it, I mean, our exposure, here's the thing with animation. Your exposure to animation is Bugs Bunny cartoons, Saturday morning cartoons, and from there you can build up to the more mature stuff.
Yeah.
Our exposure to comics was comic strips in the newspapers. That was the free stuff. You read those, the big color funnies, and from there maybe went to comics. Do you think it's different with comics as opposed to, say, animation or that kind of thing?
I just think that people who like comics...
Mm-hmm.
There's a compulsion to it that's different. And maybe animation has that too, that need to create this, you know, thing in motion.
Okay.
You know, this desire to, not just to draw, but to have a story, tell a story in this particular way.
Do you feel
way?
There's something unique about comics that are things like independent film, animation, that kind of thing, music?
It's totally.
People that like indie music, it's different.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Okay.
I think comics as a media or a medium, it's totally on its, it's completely separate. And
why is that?
Why is that?
Yes.
Because...
State your case, sir, while I try to fix my microphone.
If you get, do you have some tape?
No, sir, it's okay. I'm okay with holding it. Just go ahead.
Okay. If you think of the experience of reading a comic, it's different. It's different than reading a book. Like reading a book is something you create this universe for yourself, right? The author paints an almost abstract image of something that you fill in yourself.
Okay.
A comic's different than that. A comic is you apply, you the artist or artist and writer or writer artist, they create the world, mm-hmm. and you put yourself into it, okay. right? And it exists as it exists on the page. How you insert yourself into it is by creating the story in between the panels.
That's right. Right? That's Scott McCloud.
Sure.
That, yep.
That's different than, like, say, movies, where a movie is, once again, an immersive thing that's created for you, mm-hmm. but you are removed from, in a way, because there's nothing you can do to make that movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you read a book, mm-hmm. you're creating the characters. You're picturing the world yourself. When you're reading a comic, you are creating the time in that comic.
Right. Okay. You do that. But if you get, say you're watching a horror movie.
Okay.
At least for the first three quarters of a horror movie, a good horror movie.
Yeah.
You are putting your own horrors into that movie. When you hear that sound upstairs,
that's fine.
You've pictured a ghost.
Okay.
And the ghost in your head is not the ghost that the filmmaker, mm-hmm. and then eventually they'll show you the ghost, and it will not be as scary as the ghost in your head.
Sure.
I think art has you bringing the final 10% or more
but
to
it's
it.
But it's still you're still programmed to react to that movie, right? Like, if you were watching a horror movie and there was bouncy music playing as the lady went up the stairs, it wouldn't work, right?
That sounds creepy to me, but okay.
So you have to have what you would, if you didn't know there was something scary upstairs and it's just lighthearted music as she walks up the stairs, there wouldn't be any fear to it. So the movie has to basically create everything that you need in that movie to have those feelings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
A comic is different. It can't have those. It can have sound effects on the page.
Mm-hmm.
It can have lighting effects and things like that. But how it works is a lot different. So it's all about pacing, mm-hmm. and think, you know, and how and when you, where you turn the page. And you know this as a writer, that when, you know, and I know this as a comic writer, that you build to the page, right? So you have your payoffs always are on the other when you turn the page.
That can be one of the places for them. Yeah, definitely. That's the most obvious. I don't see there's much difference, though. Like, here's the thing. As a stand-up comedian, as someone who's been a playwright, you're saying you put yourself into the spaces in between the panels. Mm-hmm. That's where you project yourself, and I agree with that. I think in a novel, you create the environment yourself in your head. You put the whatever characters' voices you're reading, you put that in there.
Yeah.
With a comic, you put yourself in the between the panels. When you're doing a play or doing stand-up, where you put yourself in is in the pauses.
A stand-up's a bit different because stand-up is not as... I don't think it's as it's something that the audience participates in as much as a play or a movie or something like that.
I disagree. With stand-up, an audience's reaction really does, you know, just your laughter mm-hmm. makes the comedian pause in a way, and I guess that is the case in a play. It's not obviously in a film.
Yeah.
But you know that there's a
film has built-in pauses
that they hope.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very difficult to make a film. Right every time because, you mm-hmm. know, you watching it at home is very different than you watching it in the theater.
Of course.
The pause that you leave for the theater is there. But like as a stand-up or in a play, the audience laughs and the person on stage has to shut the hell up mm-hmm. until the laugh goes down.
Yeah.
Or they will – there's no way the person on stage cannot subtly react to the audience. I'm just saying there is definitely an insertion mm-hmm. of you into the performance there as well. There's always – As an audience member, an insertion. This is sounding dirty. If there's no insertion, then there's no pleasure. Am I right? In any art form, but that's the way it is. I don't see
that sounds
a
like
lot
a particular art form.
I don't see a lot of every one of them is definitely different.
But you're
but they're all
it...
unique in their own way. I mean,
but you're taking it a different way than I am, though. Like,
okay.
I'm not talking about that kind of participation, like where you're yelling at the screen or whatever.
Not even yelling.
I just mean like. When you like though, to me like a play is different than a movie.
Yes.
Like if you go to a play, you can have like the most inconsequential things happening on stage that can seem amazingly immediate to you and real because of the presence of the actors right there on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I remember one time we went to see a play together. Just like we went to see movies together. We went to see a play together about
I'll be back before midnight.
About Walt Disney.
Oh, different, yeah.
And Roy Disney on the eve of Snow White coming out.
Right.
And it's just them in the office. Talking about this imminent event, either their success or their failure is all based on this, all hinged on this one film. And I think if you saw it as a movie, it wouldn't be quite as interesting as it was to see it on stage with actors who are right there. So you have the immediacy of their presence, of that moment, of their feelings and stuff like that, where it seems so visceral and real in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Movies don't have that, so they have to approach it differently. So they would have to, if they were going to take that play and do it, they would have to you know, movie it up. They would have to change it slightly to adapt it.
Actual locations,
Locations, more characters.
Pacing is different, a lot of close-ups.
Yeah.
Close-ups of a face, play some music over it for 30 seconds, you know, and then, once again, that's where you insert yourself and think, what are they thinking as an audience member?
All things that the play doesn't really need because of what a play is in itself.
A play also really takes your focus and puts it in one area consistently through, for X amount of time, which is different than a movie. A movie will take you in many different places and you'll be like, oh, look at that background. Oh, look at that bird. Oh, look at this thing over here. But a play is usually, oh, boom.
For me, it's interesting because for me, a movie, and it's kind of like music, it's more about a feeling. Like, I don't think very much when I watch a movie. I don't spend a lot of time analyzing it or thinking about the plot or anticipating what's going to happen. I just watch it and just let it roll over me. Mm-hmm. And when it's over, I go, I liked it or I didn't like it. Based on how it made me feel in that moment, whether it was successful.
You open your heart to it.
I open my heart to the film.
You lay back and let them touch your heart.
Touch my heart. I let them insert themselves into my heart.
You hopefully don't drop any popcorn into your heart while you're eating it.
Yes.
That's very unhealthy, especially if it's buttered.
real butter. Fake butter is fine.
Okay.
So, but for a book, to me, for a book or comic or play, I find that I'm way more engaged in those than I am in a movie or music.
Okay.
Like, and when I mean engaged, I mean not necessarily in an emotional way, but in an intellectual way. Whether I'm world building in a book or, you know, creating this, how the story reads in a comic or in a play, just the amount of this, that's the real sense that I'm almost there with them, experiencing it with them on stage.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. Now, when you're working, can you listen to music?
Oh, yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. I get too into the music and I get distracted and I'm like fully into the music and then I'm like off.
I see. Cause music in that, if I'm listening to music in that way, it's just background noise.
I'm inking, in which case I can ink because I'm just basically just going over a thing in the creative aspect.
I can pencil, I can write, I can whatever.
Not at all.
Because what it does
I usually throw in white noise if I have to.
But that's my white noise. Sometimes a song will insert itself, and I always like to say that a song shot a blue beam of light into my brain. Because, you know, without me consciously realizing it, it attracts my attention to the song, and I'm doing something, and then I'm like, oh, this song's really good. Oh. And often, because I buy a lot of music magazines, and especially British ones, and they all come with CDs.
Right. Oh, Dave, by the way, push the cough button right now.
I'm going to push the cough button. which switch is it again?
Oh, okay, it was that button.
I'll push it now.
Okay. Well. Oh, thanks for pushing it. That second one was the worst.
So I get a lot of CDs with them.
Right.
And they're okay. Sometimes they're like new music, like, you know, all new songs by new artists and stuff. And
new music is the worst, right?
Yeah.
The worst.
I'm not interested in a lot of new music. But, I mean, I wasn't interested in a lot of new music when I was a teenager.
No.
You know, there's a lot of it's just dreck. So I'll be listening to it, but it's just on in the background. And I'll just get through it. And there's some songs that, they'll shoot a blue beam of light. And I'll be like, bing, what was that? That was really good. And, you know, I'll go back and take a look at it. But otherwise, a lot of it just kind of washes over me. It's interesting, I know that you have that about music where you have to just work in silence.
Well, I start singing along to it or something, and then I'm like, what's that lyric? Damn it. You know, I'm like, could I hit that note? I don't, all right, and then I got to start again.
I'll do that in the car, but often even there, it just helps me to go off into my own little world, which isn't necessarily safe while you're driving.
Well, I like, I'm often the person who has to talk to the driver, and I like the music, because then you can sing along and do whatever, and music does keep me awake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it while driving. Let's say I was driving and I was totally daydreaming. I have no idea what I was daydreaming about. And suddenly there's all these red lights in front of me. There's all these brake lights in front of me. And I was like, oh, I better stop. But I was so distracted. I was so in this other world that I almost forgot to stop. It was so weird. Shouldn't really get into that kind of fugue state while you're driving, I guess. It's unsafe.
No.
So, okay, we're getting close to the end of the show. So let's just go back to something you want to talk about, which is Honor Majesty's Secret Service being the best James Bond film. Admittedly, it would be the very, very best film ever made if it starred Sean Connery as James Bond.
Okay.
Because he quit just before that film was made and came
then
back.
And they had to beg him to come back.
He came back into Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds Are Forever,
Well, I think actually it's different. I think actually it went, didn't it go, no, maybe I'm wrong.
No, Diamonds Are Forever came afterwards, okay. And then, that was the last one.
Then it was Live and Let Die after that. And then Roger Moore took over.
Yep.
See, I think that film is great because, and I'm sorry if I'm going to spoil it for people who've never seen Honor Majesty's Secret Service, but this film was released in 1969.
Those of you who don't want it spoiled, turn us off now.
No, don't turn us off.
Yeah, turn us off.
Screw you.
Turn us off.
You should watch it. You should have seen it by now.
You don't have the guts to turn us off right now.
So, uh-oh, can you push the cough switch down? Oh, sorry.
All right, I got
You're nowhere near the cough switch.
Okay, good.
Okay.
You don't have a hernia.
Thank God.
By the way, I've got to put some money in that jar of yours. There we go. Okay.
Yes, I wonder what that massage is about.
All right, so it starts off, action-packed scene.
Yes. Okay, here's what makes it great. Here's what makes it great, okay? Yeah. I'm going to tell you what makes it great.
That basically the whole movie is going, James Bond movies are really great, huh? That was pretty much what the movie was saying for the beginning, at least.
Well, because you know who directed it? It was Peter Hunt, who edited all the other films. So what makes the early James Bond films really great? Like the fight scene in From Russia with Love in the train compartment between Robert Shaw and Sean Connery. Not the fight, the editing. The way that fight is created in the editing suite, that's what makes that fight so great. And most directors don't understand that anymore. The film that gets really close to it is the second one of the ones with Damon, the Matt Damon. You know the one I'm talking
about? Oh, yeah, the Bourne.
Bourne. There's one where he's fighting with a guy in his kitchen in Germany, and that scene is perfectly edited. That's just like a perfectly edited fight sequence, like right out of the Peter Hunt fight sequence book. So if you watch Honor, Majesty, Secret Service, yes, it starts with that fight on the beach, I believe,
it's
right?
It's tight and fast. Go, go, go.
He cuts out the swing. That's what he did all the time. He cut out the swing. So what you get is the punch without any swing.
It's actually, and it's also kind of fun, how he drives his car onto the beach and squeals it to it, and he goes,
but they did the same thing on Rockford Files, too. It's always annoying.
Yeah. On the beach.
On the sand.
Yeah, the sand is well making known, that sound. What well he's known. Clearly doing is he's killing some crabs that are screaming in pain.
Screaming in pain. Oh, the humanity. Okay, the other great thing about that film.
Are we still? Wait, we got to talk about the end of the opening.
Oh, okay.
Or what he says to the audience.
I don't remember. What is it?
I don't remember.
Something about the other guy, right?
Yeah, okay, here's what happens.
It's been a while since I watched
it. So he saves a girl's life, and then she steals his car.
He's awesome.
But then gets in her own car and leaves. And he turns to the camera and goes, it's never happened to the other guy.
That's right, yes.
And it's like, what did he just say? And then it's bop, 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 bop. And then the movie starts, and the opening title sequence is all clips from the previous movies.
Yeah.
Interesting because choice to just go, hey, you know what? We all like James Bond. Remember how much you like Dr. No? And then later in the movie, they keep playing things from, like, he decides to quit.
Okay.
That guy quits a lot.
Yeah.
So he's packing his bags, and as he's putting things in the bag, all of a sudden they're playing, like, Underneath the Mango Tree, which is from Dr. No, and then he puts another thing in, and it's the music from that film, and over here, and it's just like, wow, you had the best of Bond album playing while you're packing.
Because they wanted to have this continuity between the two actors, right? But, I mean, okay, that film, here's several great things about it. One, he wears a kilt.
Mm-hmm.
Two, he marries Diana Rigg.
Right. He's got frilly shirts galore.
Frilly shirts galore.
That guy, poofy shirt. If you've ever seen the Seinfeld episode with poofy shirt, he wears those shirts.
But it's not just that he marries Diana Rigg, because Diana Rigg is the daughter of a villain, right? Like a gangster kind of a character.
Yeah,
a criminal.
He's one of those shades of gray guys.
Yeah.
In that he's into bondage.
He's into James Bondage.
That's right.
But when he... I don't know. To me, that film is just perfect because it has a great story arc that's emotional. Like all those other, like the Sean Connery ones, there's no emotion in those films. Like you watch Dr. No, when the agent that he's working with, the female agent gets killed in the hotel room and stuff like that, his reaction's like,
Dr. No is interesting. Gosh. We watched that one the other day, and he's a bit of a bumbler in that. Like he goes in and his boss is reaming him out and just like, give me that Beretta. You don't know what you're doing. Come on, don't be a boob. You got shot in the arm last time.
Yeah.
Come on, you're dumb. Give me that. Get out of here. You know, a lot of that. And just like him screwing up and doing little things to be successful.
Well, they hadn't quite perfected the character yet.
No.
And I was watching a documentary about the making of Dr. No and some of the earlier films. And actually, a lot of the character of James Bond came from the director of those movies who knew all those sort of things. He knew how you play canasta or whatever the heck they play at all the gambling. Like he knew the rules of those games that no one else knew. Like those bank, you know, where they're bank and putting those big tiles down and things like, and he knew champagne and he knew it just was a classy gentleman. So he was able to bring all that knowledge to the James Bond character and it kind of changed the character. So you see how the character evolves into the next film. But once it's written, so you can't really change that.
And it does take a while. Like, these movies take a while.
Mm-hmm.
Before
they reach the pinnacle of perfection, which is Honor, Majesty, Secret Service.
Yeah, there you go.
But name a better film. Name a better James Bond film.
Casino Royale.
Horrible movie with David Niven?
No. The Casino, other one.
Casino Royale is a... I'll say Casino Royale is a very good movie. I'm just joking with you.
Okay,
Casino,
good.
Casino Royale is a very good film, and yeah. I really, really, really mm-hmm. like it. I like it a lot.
All right.
The only problem I have with it is he plays poker in it, which is dumb. Because James Bond would not play poker.
All right.
Because he's not from Texas, and no. he doesn't hold him.
No, but he does know what year it is. And people, do people play Baccarat now?
Yeah.
Do they?
In those places, yes.
Do they?
Yes, they do.
Okay, but they
yes,
do
they? Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
They do?
Yes, they do.
All right, they do.
They're European. Yeah.
Okay.
They're European.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, would the audience be able to follow that?
The villain in that one mm-hmm. is so-so in okay. Casino Royale. He's so-so. What's great about that film is how much running he does. I love that about it because after you've got through Roger Moore wearing his corset,
right?
You know, when you get it's this great, and Timothy Dalton was okay, but the films are kind of flat.
He was holding.
They just didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
they didn't. They had lost.
I got gotcha.
They like, lost James.
I got gotcha. But when you're talking about like the emotional arc, I think that one's got a real good emotional arc too. Like yeah. he's messed up by mm-hmm. the end. He's yeah. messed up.
No, it's good. Yeah. That's what I say. It would be second in my list.
Okay,
for sure.
That's fine.
But I still think the Honor Majesty's Secret Service is a better film.
I think there's some parts that drag like nobody's business in it. And it's weird too, the thing where he goes up to the
James Bond films drag like nobody's business at some part
Casino
of it.
Casino Royale doesn't.
Because there's always some talking, blah 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 talking.
Casino
parts.
Royale doesn't. Watch it. See tell me the drag.
I've seen it twice.
When's it drag?
I can't remember.
Yeah, asked and answered. So
when he's running down that hill after the car, when it wait, that was exciting.
That's pretty exciting.
When he's running at the airport and he's trying to catch up to the
George Lazenby, and I liked it too. I liked the film. Let me just say mm-hmm. that. But here's where it was like weird. Where
he's wearing a kilt.
He loves Rig.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we've had that.
Wait
montage.
A second. Is he still a man from the '60s? Is that what you're going to tell me?
And then he goes up to the orgy yeah. palace mm-hmm. and
his place in Switzerland
and fucks two gals.
Uh huh.
And then is saved later by Rig.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I love you. Things are great. We're going back to where we are, eh, baby? Yeah, no problem here, eh, baby? Yeah, yeah, you and your herpes come down. You know, well, let's see how this all goes. You know, that sexy gal draws her room number on his leg and lipstick. I just wanted, like, them to start going at it and go, hey, what's that number 8 there? Oh, that's just infinity, baby. That's me thinking how much I'll love you forever. That's how it goes.
Sounds like Bruce Campbell, not James Bond.
Yeah.
Baby.
Yeah.
Give me some sugar.
And I don't think Telly Savalas was the best villain. You know, I think he was just like.
Say the same about Mats, whatever his name is.
Mats?
The guy who played the villain in Casino Royale.
Okay, but
I like that actor a lot, and I do think he's okay in the role. But I just think the villain is so.
I think he's more consistent with what his deal is. Whereas Telly Savalas just seems to be, hey, it's great to have you here. Why don't you go over here? Listen, you know where I'm gonna put you. I'm gonna put you in this room with this window. Don't go out the window. He went out the window. What was I thinking? Anyway, oh, he escaped again. Oh, why? Well, it's a shame he escaped again. That I didn't just tie him up or anything.
You know, you could say that.
Well, I'm gonna go skiing.
You could say that about every film.
Now let's go skiing.
I mean, Casino Royale, it's a different movie. It's a different style of movie.
Oh, I get it. It's a different era.
60s ones,
I
right?
get it. Here's the style that it is. It's the style of better.
Oh, no, it's not.
Because you don't have that cheesy, like, it's great. You're going down the hill and people are skiing and you're like, oh, this is great. And they always had that blue screen shot, which is the person's head in front of clearly different sky. And it's just like, why do you need to do that?
Because they didn't have CGI. Like,
they
have
care.
For Casino
I don't
Royale.
Need to see a close up of a face. I'm fine. I get that he's skiing.
Daniel Craig isn't standing on a train.
All right, I get that's fine.
It's all computer
that's
generated,
fine.
Right?
That's fine. One looks good, one clearly.
He's not like the guy's in emergency. He's not really in the back of the fire engine. Those guys are courageous.
Okay. So here's the flaws with Majesty's Secret Service. He's desperately in love with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Fucks around on her. No repercussions.
Yeah. That's James Bond, though.
Villain doesn't really seem to have like a strong motivation. Just all over the place.
Same in the Casino Royale.
No, he seems to be consistent. You know,
and
then he does the big nut smash.
Go on with your complaints. Yeah.
Shows him the ropes.
That's right.
And and then I get that it's a sad ending, and I get that someone gets killed, but when you see Telly Savalas in his neck brace driving, it looks ridiculous. It looks ridiculous that
but
he's in his neck brace.
That's because you know him as Kojak.
No, it's
when
ridiculous.
He made that movie, he was not Kojak.
No,
yet.
It's not. That's not.
Yes, that's
ridiculous.
What it is.
No,
you're
it's
thinking.
That he's look cool, and now he's in a neck brace, and he's like really mad going down the road, and you've got the German woman with a gun, and it's like, no, I know what you're trying to do, but this is not it.
Oh, you're wrong.
Okay, well,
you're 50 Shades of Wrong.
All right. Well, you know what, listeners?
I'm going to watch that movie again. I'm going to watch it soon.
You know, have you got a Blu-ray player at home?
Yeah, I do.
Well, why don't I lend it to you tonight?
Oh, okay.
All right, there. Let's see tonight. It's all going to work out.
There we go.
All right. You know, let us know what you think the best James Bond film is. Let's do that.
Okay.
All right? And I think most people...
The more people agree with me, the more I will like you.
That's right. Now, I know most of you are going to say Octopussy. We're going to put that as number one. Clearly Octopussy.
Maude Adams.
Just for the name alone.
Yes.
And then we'll go on. But yeah, no, let us know what you think, because we care what you think. By the way, hey, welcome to our second year, Dave.
Thank you.
First show of the second year.
Up, onwards and upwards, sir.
You think so?
No, it's pretty much.
Straight line or better. Keeping it level. Running out the clock.
We need to get defibrillated, people.
Yeah, I'm just hoping till whatever the next thing after the internet shows up, so we can stop doing this.
More emergency references, the better for our show.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Wow, Randolph Mantooth. He is dreamy.
He was dreamy.
And he's got man-like teeth. Very large teeth.
Yes, he does.
His name is what he is. Yeah. Oh, here's the thing. Kevin T. T? Ty?
Ty. I say Ty.
After we had our infinite discussion on emergency, mm-hmm. Went home that night,
yeah.
And me and Pia were doing some work, and so we went, let's just have a movie on in the background we don't care to watch, and that we had not seen before.
Okay.
And it was a movie, a little film, Dave,
yeah.
Called Roadhouse.
And he's in it.
He is all over it.
Yeah.
I thought he would just be in the first 5 minutes mm-hmm. and be done.
Mm-hmm.
No, that is good Kevin Ty film.
Let's just call him Roy.
He's firing guns. He's kicking ass. He's rich.
Taking names, chewing bubblegum.
Yep. It is so a movie of the 80s. It's got throat ripping.
And they swear a lot?
I don't know if they swear a lot.
Didn't that seem to be like a thing in the 80s? A
little bit.
It's always like, fuck this, fuck that.
Yeah.
And, like an Uncle Buck. It was originally called Uncle Fuck.
And here's a little bit of an undertone. There was a real, if you're, say, a fella that likes fellas, okay, if you're that kind of lad.
Are you saying that there is a certain amount of...
Homoerotic.
Who's reading them Ulysses?
Okay, you know that scene from Top Gun where they're having the volleyball?
Mm-hmm.
The whole movie is that.
Is that right?
Pretty much. Now, to Patrick Stewart. Patrick Swayze does fall in love with a lady who looks like a nice-looking gentleman.
Is that right? Now, this is the 80s, though. There was a real kind of a...
There is.
Tomboyish.
There really, really is. Yeah. And that guy's shirt falls off like nobody's business. Nobody's business. There's always excuses for him to get out from something with no pants. Constantly.
Well, can I tell you one more thing about
Kevin? And then throat ripping.
Can I tell you one more thing about Kevin Ty?
Okay.
As he lives right across the border from us in Cedrawulli, which is a town near Vernon. It's about what, 45-minute drive away.
He lives in Canada?
No, lives in the States.
Just just
down,
across from...
Past Bellingham, kind of just down near Vernon.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Can we get him on the show?
Let's try.
All right. Dave's going to try and get him on the show.
I'm going to phone him.
Next week, we're not...
You don't know me.
We're not going to say who's on the show next week, because maybe they'll bail after hearing this episode. But we have a special guest next week that we're quite excited about.
Yep.
And let's just say, do you like a video game? Well, maybe this person's been in those. Do you like TV? He has been in that. Do you like the radio? He's on the radio.
He listens to the radio.
He listens to the radio.
Do you like newspapers? He reads them.
No one reads newspapers
anymore. Do you like magazines?
No.
He has subscribed to
Once
some.
Once again, no
he
one
had a
reads,
subscription to what? Owl magazine when he was a kid.
Oh, the micro shrinker guys. I like those guys.
There you go.
Shrank down. They always get stuck mm-hmm. in a water drop and almost die. Good thinking, jerks. Plan it out. Bring a knife, you dummies.
Every month I got a torn up copy of Owl magazine because my dog would attack it as it came into the house.
Well, he hated owls.
He hated owls and also magazines, apparently.
Your dog had irritable owl syndrome.
Good night, everybody.
Pretty much. If you want to listen to sketches, I do the Irrelevant shows on CBC Radio. I write for that show. I don't really have anything live coming up for the rest
of... Yes, we do. We have something on December the 12th.
Oh, that's a good point.
Ian and I are appearing as ourselves for a trivia contest.
Basically, yeah. There's a screening of the movie, the J. Baruchel movie, The Goon.
The Goon with Christian Scott Thomas from the Outpatient.
That's right.
Okay.
No. But it's to raise money for the Canucks Children's Hospice. It's at the Rio Theater. It's on the 12th. We'll give you more information on our website. And Dave and I will be going up and showing... I'll be showing my knowledge of hockey trivia.
And I'll be showing my knowledge of I don't have much trivia knowledge, actually.
No, see, my twist was I know nothing about hockey.
Oh, okay.
But you know something about everything. You got to think like something you know nothing about. You say something you know nothing about.
Something I know nothing about, podcasting.
Exactly. So if you want to come and see us in person on the 12th at the Real Theater, we will be there. And it's apparently a good movie, too. And there'll be some fun. There'll be some stand-up. It'll be good times. So we'll let you know more about that. Dave, this is your show to wrap up. Wrap it up.
I'm going to wrap it up now like a gift for everyone.
Yep.
And say goodbye and good riddance.
Wow. It's cold.
Myself down.
Oh. Did you just count down wrong? Did you count
no,
up?
I counted aloud. I need a moment of silence.
Yeah.
Let me count aloud.
Sure.
Let me try that again.
Well, that's the problem. Whenever you have a moment of silence, Dave always goes like, I missed that person.
Let's have a moment of silence for who are we momenting silencing for?